Yeah, I'm a special agent with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and for the last 3 years, and we haven't had a panel for the last 3 years. The last one we had, I don't know, how many of you were here for the last Meet the Fed panel that was in the tent on the roof?
Yeah.
That was an interesting experience. It was about 114 degrees outside. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday afternoon. It was 98 degrees in the tent, and I'm going, who in their right mind would ever come to a panel, you know, in Las Vegas on a Saturday afternoon, you know, in that kind of weather? And I think we had about 1,200 people in that tent. So that just shows you have shows a lack of good judgment on your part. So let me rescind that. You could not work for the government. Well, maybe you could.
Less than 500. Before, yeah.
What we're here for, the reason the feds are here, and our objective for having this Meet the Fed panel is kind of threefold. If you've crossed the line, how many of you have crossed the line and hacked somebody's system?
I think I can raise my hand.
But arrest that guy in the second row.
I meant illegally, Robert. Shit, the last time I had everybody stand up, and I said, if you've never hacked a system, sit down. Half the guys sat down, and we took pictures of all the rest, you know. And you guys didn't fall for it this time. So anyway, if you have crossed that line,
I
want to let you know that we're working together, and we are sharing information, and we will catch you, and we will ruin your life. That's not a good thing. So, if you haven't stepped over that line, please don't. First off, we've got enough noise. If you haven't noticed, there is a global war on terrorism, and all the intrusions that we see, most of them are just noise that take valuable resources away from the global war on terrorism and other really significant things that we're trying to do. Takes those resources away from that. And if you haven't crossed that line, we in the government are looking for good, talented people. We need a lot of help. Be careful there. We always need a steady flow of talented people. I'll get to questions in a second because I don't know if I want to listen to you or not. So that's kind of our agenda here and why we're here. So what I wanted to do is kind of start at the far end and introduce who's on the panel. Each person will later on get a 1-2 minute opening statement, and then we're just going to open it up to questions from you guys. Also, just some random thoughts. After this is over, at 2 o'clock, I'm in the dunk tank. Well, so when Jeff called and said, you know, I don't know how to ask you this, but it would really be cool if we could dunk a Fed, you know. And it's not like I ain't been dunked before, you know. So I said, well, where's the money go? He said, EFF. I said, hell no. So what I did, we negotiated, and the money for the dunk tank will go to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So if you want to support a good charity, okay? Yeah. Also, I do have a limited number. These are embroidered, okay? All right, so limited number of these, and it's $49. Okay, at the far end is Andy Freed. He's a senior special agent with the Treasury Inspector General. Everybody loves those guys for tax administration, and he does system intrusions there. He's been with Treasury for 16 years now. And before that, I met Andy back in probably 1986, 87. He was still working for Kennedy Space Flight Center. And just a side note, he wrote all the forensics tools that everybody in the law enforcement community used internationally until about 1993. Then we tested the tools and found out that they weren't worth a shit. So, next is Mike Jacobs. Mike Jacobs is a retired Fed. Mike joined SRA in October of 2002 as a senior advisor, but his real job as a Fed was that he was the director of information assurance for NSA. So I'm not going to go through all the awards that he's won, but what was really neat was he was also the mayor of College Park for 4 years, and he was on the city council there for 14 years. So not only is he a Fed, but he was a politician, so you really ought to hate him and the IRS guy down here.
Thanks, Jim.
Next in line is Ovi Carroll. Ovi Carroll is a special agent in charge of the Computer Crime Unit for the U.S. Postal Service. So, you know, anybody who's using email, he's going to run a case on you because they just don't like email. He's got an extensive background, was an OSI, Air Force OSI agent for about 18 years before retiring and going to U.S. Postal Service.
Don't make him angry.
Postal Service, man.
Yeah, most agents, when you travel today, you travel armed. They don't let Postal Service guys travel armed. And then yesterday, I met Robert Marr Sr. I had met him a couple of times, you know, just in passing, going up and introducing myself, and he sure to hell didn't remember me. So yesterday I happened to meet him up when I was picking up the speaker badges, and he said, "Well, do I know you?" And I said, "No, you really, I've met you a couple times, but I'm sure you don't remember me, but the fact is I was the case agent on your son's case. So I know your son a little bit better than I know you." So he's agreed to sit in on the panel, but he's not allowed to talk. Just immediately to my left is Alvin Wallace. Alvin Wallace is a supervisory special agent with the Air Force Office Special Investigations, and he's a special agent in charge at DET 253 in San Antonio, which is co-located with the Air Force Information Warfare Information Operations Center. He's had an extensive background. We worked together as a computer crime investigator way back in 1988. He worked with me at the Defense Computer Forensics Lab, so he's got a very, so if you got technical questions, we're going to give them to Alvin. One guy is on his way. It's the FBI. They're always late. Special Agent Tim Huff. He's in a cab. He's at the airport, and he's on his way over, and they're gonna bring him in as soon as he gets here. He has a BS in computer science from Jacksonville University and was a U.S. Naval officer from 85 to 96 before joining the FBI, and now he's part of the FBI computer analysis response team. So hopefully Tim will be here pretty soon. So at this point, what we do is we'll start at the far end with Andy. Let everybody take a 2 or 3 minute opening statement, and then we're just going to open it up to you guys for questions.
As he said, my name is Andrew Freed. I'm a senior special agent with the Treasury Inspector General for Tax.
I already said that, Andy.
And so we can't. Basically, one of the things that's unique about our organization, for those of you who don't know who we are, we're actually like the IRS internal security. Everybody here pay their taxes that aren't foreign?
Okay, if you haven't paid your taxes, please raise your hand.
But I will.
No, I'm not for paying
taxes. Well, I can assure you.
You're a liar, but that was pretty good.
Well, I can assure you they don't give us any professional discounts either, unfortunately. One of the unique things about our organization is we're physically co-located with the IRS Computer Security Incident Response Center. So we have a really good working relationship where we basically both work together at doing proactive testing as well as reactive cases to situations. We're located out of Lanham, Maryland, and basically there's about 7 of us that are in this squad, and we refer to the squad as the System Intrusion and Network Attack Response Team, or SINART. It sounded kind of like Space Trekkie, so we kind of liked it. Basically, we have done a lot of work with some of the people out here. It's nice to see a face with a port number that I've seen on our IDS. Thank you very much. But we actually have worked with a number of y'all. We've had some of the people come up and say, always wanted to attack a Fed system, and we've given permission to do it with a couple ground rules. So we're not actually anti-hackers, and we're not anti-computer people. In fact, this is my sixth year here. I enjoy the people here. I enjoy being here. And I'll certainly be willing to talk to anybody that wants to talk to us after the presentation.
Thanks, Andy. I'm Mike Jacobs. It's a pleasure to be here. For about 10 years, I avoided judiciously coming here for obvious reasons. However, now that I'm retired, it's really been an enjoyable couple of days meeting with you. And during my time as the Director of Information Assurance at NSA, I often told my folks that the hacker community is probably our ally. And we need to pay attention to what they're doing out there. We can learn from what they're doing out there. That said, stay within the law. Now, I'd like to ask you all to stand for a moment. Come on.
Come on,
I mean,
come
it's
on.
It's not that early in the day. A little test.
Oh, yeah. Come on, come on. Everybody who...
you know, for years... DEF CON has run the Spot the Fed contest, if you will. I'd like to suggest that there's another contest that they might start next year. It's called Spot the FEO. So all of you who are not foreign intelligence officers, sit down. Caught a couple.
Yeah.
Playing defense is often more difficult than playing offense. And indeed, in my 38 years of playing defense, we were often outsmarted by those using the same techniques, technology, and analytical processes because they were just slightly better at playing offense. I would urge you to take your talents, your intellect, your curiosity, and your aggressiveness and play defense. Thanks.
Oh, by the way.
This is $59.95.
Obi. Wow, I came in empty-handed. As he said, I work for the Postal Inspector General's office. We do all the computer intrusion and computer forensics for the Postal IG. It's pretty simple. I didn't bring any trinkets, but I tell you what I'll do is whoever is the goon that's running the dunk tank, whoever donates the most money to dunk.
Wait, I owe you a nickel.
Yeah. Whoever donates the most money to dunk Jim, yeah, that's right, to Jim Christie, I'll give him the shirt off my back, the one right here. How's that?
We really don't work well together.
I'm primarily here to say no comment. But I'd like to suppress a few rumors that I have heard about me and the others by saying that I have never been indicted for a felony, well, in the United States.
Recently.
Yeah, right, recently.
Just and go with convicted.
Is John Ashcroft here today? Okay,
spirit.
I've said enough.
Albert.
As Jim said, I am an Air Force OSI agent. The Air Force realized early on, as many of the people in this room did, that the computers were very important to the way society and information was going to flow in the future. The OSI established a computer crime investigative program back in 1978. Some of the best computer crime investigators in other federal agencies all came and had their start in the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and we're still actively recruiting because while we are one of the best and one of the best training grounds, we seem to have a retention problem thanks to industry out there and postal and other people like that. So we would like to encourage everyone out there. I mean, the Department of Defense realizes how important computers are to the flow of information and for defending the United States. and we're always on the lookout for good people. And
what are you going to do to them when you find them?
Well, we're going to pay them, and we're going to pay them well. And there are also
the lobotomy.
And there are also some programs that will allow for relief of certain student loan debts if you stay as a civilian employee for a certain period of time. I didn't have room for T-shirts as the rest of them do, but I do have a few coins. Well, I'll let Mr. I lost one already. Sorry.
Okay, at this point, we'll open it up to questions from the floor, but please speak loud because, you know, when we repeat your question, we're going to twist it up. Yes, sir.
Okay, to follow up on what you just said, I know the NSA has a program, it's buried in their site, fine, but are there any scholarship programs out there that your agencies provide for students who are in college?
Very, very much so. It's active.
Finally, because it's really buried. The NSA one I found for some of my students, but it's really hard to find. It's not put on the front page.
It's not necessarily very easy to find, but I assure you it does exist reasonably large. I mean, it's not hundreds and hundreds or something like that, but it's dozens. And it's effective in the sense, both in the sense it gives the people a very interesting thing to do for the few years that they need it going through college. But also, it provides an important method of recruitment, just as my buddy over here has been talking about. Recruitment is very important and rather difficult for a number of reasons, including, of course, the commercial end of the business.
There are two federally sponsored programs, loosely referred to as the Cyber Corps. One is a Department of Defense program, which is the one that NSA manages.
That's what I was thinking.
And the other one is managed by the National Science Foundation. It's considerably larger. There are today 400 or 500 student scholarships at work at about 50 different universities across the country. And you can go to the National Science Foundation's homepage and you'll find it.
Yeah, just last week, Tulsa University hosted the Cyber Corps 2004 symposium, and there was a job fair. Most of the law enforcement, federal law enforcement agencies were there recruiting. I got 52 resumes. These are talented people, both postgraduate and graduate level. And I got to tell you that we went back to our bosses and we said, "Hi, how you doing, Tim? This is Tim Hoff, FBI. We've already introduced you." They're clapping for you now, but I went back and we have 7 vacancies right now, civil service vacancies. They were advertised at the GS-13 level. These guys coming out of Cyber Corps don't qualify for a GS-13. So we went back and we're rewriting the position descriptions and we're going to re-advertise them so we can get these guys that have gone through forensics training, IA training, to bring them on to, with law enforcement.
And also, those of you who have already gotten your degree and you're saddled with a large amount of student loans, a program was started about 2 years ago to try and recruit people into the federal service. And if you go out to opm.gov, each agency is implementing it differently, but you can have up to 70-75% of your student loans forgiven based on government service within the GS.
Do we have any Cyber Corps students here? Okay. Tim, would you like to make an opening statement? We're in the question and answer. Everybody's had a couple of minutes to make an opening statement, so now it's your turn in the barrel.
You already went over the bios and stuff, right?
Yes.
There's not much more to say. I've been doing computer forensics now for 7 years. I've been an agent for 8 years. I've been based out of the Pittsburgh office for the first 6 years in the Bureau, and now I'm at Quantico, and I'm coordinating all the forensic activities for the eastern half of the U.S., other than that, I'll sit and listen for a little bit, cool. And then I'll speak up. Actually, the airline not only made me late by about 3 hours, they also lost my luggage. So I intended on showing up in a shirt that actually said FBI on it, and I had this T-shirt that I wear when I travel. So my apologies.
Yes, sir.
I've got two quick questions, if you don't mind. First one, because we've got a couple of NSA people here. You guys know about the Pueblo, right?
Yes.
What?
Who? Pueblo.
The city in Colorado.
If you haven't gone anywhere else to mine, if that's in fact a really fine for employment, or for contract services or whatever, once you're trained, then you're limiting yourself to the one of them.
Are you asking whether it's difficult to be employed if you're across the line?
To be comfortable.
Well, most of the federal law enforcement agencies require you to have a clearance. So depending on what in that clearance and that background investigation, they're going to look at when you broke the law. And, you know, everybody's broken the law probably during their lifetime, except me. So it depends on when you did it. If you want a job, if you were breaking the law yesterday and now you want to come to work for the government tomorrow, the chances are we're not going to select you because there's a whole lot of talented people that haven't crossed over that line in, let's say, the last 5, 7, 8 years. So if you had a choice, would you want someone who – well, I'm not asking the wrong audience. Would you guys want somebody – so it depends when you did it, what the severity of it, of the crime was, things like that. So it's it, you know, everything's taken on a case by case.
Well, getting caught isn't exactly something you got to look at. It's if we have an investigation on you because of your activities. I have occasion to.
I can't hear you.
I've had some investigative experience with a couple people that have gone on and done certain activities, and I didn't decide to charge them because basically they wanted to look at them a little bit more, and they went a couple years, and now they've tried to get a legitimate job and now applied for security clearance, and they're not going to get it because we've got this history of them from 2, 3, 4, 5 years back that we've shown that they have actually intruded upon certain areas. Just because they don't have anything charges brought against you doesn't mean there isn't some kind of file on you of your activities.
How is it possible to get on that with what General Frank said yesterday, that the U.S. military
Well, that's good for the military. Law enforcement, I don't think it's going to go that far.
And working with someone and hiring them are two different things. We'll work with anybody.
And I think
we may not pay you.
Term might be used.
But, yeah. Could you stand up and project for everybody?
You say you have a file on one or two people who come to you for 1 to 7 years after they've been tampering. How do you go about
doing
that file?
Huh?
Freedom of Information Act.
In the microphone, I can't read it.
Sorry. Does that mean anything? Freedom of Information Acts are taken very seriously by any government organizations. We all have huge bureaucracies set up to answer them. If you request information from an organization that does hold that information, you will get a response.
Even after September 11th?
Of course.
Yeah.
That did.
Okay, wait. You already had your turn, sir. Right here. Stand up, would you please?
Yeah. I wanted to ask a question about prior clearance. One of the catch 22s that I've run into, even though I know I'm clearable, I won't even be considered for a job unless I already have a clearance. So if I somehow am born out of the fetus with a clearance, then somebody will hire me, but they won't unless they already have a clearance.
That's an agency by agency decision. I can tell you that Jim and I were both at the Defense Computer Forensic Lab at the same time, and we brought on an enormous number of people who had no clearances prior to their applying for the job, both as government workers and as contractors working on the contract.
Kids right out of college, and no clearance. You know, we get them an interim clearance, you know, and that limits what they're working on till their clearance is adjudicated. But we took it.
I've been cleared by the Secret Service because of prior.
It But, and that's typically a thing. I mean, if it's a contractor's position, it's normal. If it's a government position, you should be considered as long as you're able to get a clearance. The contractors often are worried about the bottom line. So if they bring you on with no clearance, right now it takes about 18 months to get you a full up top secret clearance.
More than $50,000.
And it's a $50,000 cost. So looking at you and an equally qualified person who has the clearance already in hand puts you at a disadvantage.
Well, you know, it is true that, you know, even the contractor community would prefer to hire people with clearances, but you can come and get my business card afterwards. We hire people without clearances. Right. I'm not in that business anymore. I'm a contractor.
Yes, sir. White shirt.
Which agency did you attack?
Yeah. Filed to all of them.
Which one did you attack? That's where I would start with.
Yeah. There are some individuals who basically have blanketed the federal law enforcement organizations requesting information about whether or not they have a file related to them. And they will come back with an answer of no.
Mm-hmm. Start one.
That's it.
Again?
Yes, sir.
What is that? That was a question.
Yeah, I couldn't hear it either.
I think the original question was, if the private sector will pay me $100,000 to eat donuts and sit at home, what's the government going to offer? The federal government, the salaries are beginning to get more competitive with the private sector. You can go out. No, they have made special considerations for IT. At the CIO level, at the CIO level of different organizations, they're starting to come out with some new programs. There is stability in working for the federal government. The leave is typically better than the leave that you'd get in the private sector. And you're serving your country. There are advantages to it, but then again, there are disadvantages to the bottom line.
And if you're that interested in donuts, the federal law enforcement gets free donuts.
I would like to shift the grounds of the discussion by just a bit, because we're hearing about people who have difficulty finding jobs because they don't have clearances or it takes them too long to get them. As an employee of whatever it is, whatever organization it is that I work for, I go through a polygraph every few years. I think it's every three normally, but let me tell you the questions from the last and answers from the last polygraph exam that I went through. First was, sir, have you ever committed espionage? Yes. Have you ever committed sabotage? Yes. Have you ever deliberately destroyed a piece of computing equipment? Yes. Now, there was some further discussion with the polygraph examiner, but basically that was the entire content of the polygraph examination. And I think you can understand that some jobs and some activities that people engage in are occasionally pretty damn strange. And I don't necessarily have much in common with the people on my right in that kind of thing. And that story just sits as it was. Funny, if you like.
All the way in the back. Yep. Real loud. Can't.
What is your opinion on the Patriot Act?
What? What? Our opinion of the Patriot Act.
Oh, my, yeah, right. Andy, we'll start down here, Andy.
Yeah, I haven't heard from Andy yet.
No comment.
I think that Mr. Ashcroft is taking attendance at this particular forum.
Keep in mind that the Patriot Act was enacted after a catastrophic event. Similar reactions can occur in this government, despite the fact that we are a nation of freedoms, after any catastrophic event. So if in cyberspace catastrophic events begin to occur, similar acts can be enacted. There are things about the Patriot Act that personally disturb me in terms of individual freedoms. However, they are understandable in the context of the times we live in. And so further activity in other areas that can precipitate the same sort of response from the Congress further risks our freedoms.
Can I add something to that a little bit?
Please.
Just because the Patriot Act is out there doesn't mean every judge out there is going to give you carte blanche to go out and do all these things that are possible. It takes a stack of justification and a great deal of investigation beforehand, in many cases, to get permission to do the things that the Patriot Act does ask or make available. So just because the law is there doesn't mean that all of a sudden we're tapping everybody's phones and we're doing all these things. We just don't have the manpower or the ability. We don't have the need to do that. We're looking at the people that are the serious bad guys. The people on the fringes, they're on the fringes. Right now, for the FBI, the importance is international domestic terrorism, and that's right up there. Patriot Act does apply to a lot of those things. But we've got to do our homework first to get justification to say, this really needs to be done. And the judges out there, they're real hard asses about that sort of stuff. They just don't say, okay, you're an agent, you get it. No. They look at it, they read it, they question, and sometimes they deny it. They say, you don't have enough information. So it's just not a big open book for us.
And I guess the last thing I'd like to add is, how many people out here, please raise your hand, have actually read the Patriot Act and seen what's written into it? And how many of those people actually think that it's impinging upon your personal privacy? And it's not quite as, it wasn't quite as many, but I mean, the Patriot Act does not do many of the things that the popular press has put forward and does not impinge on the freedoms that the popular press has always indicated that it does. I mean, it gives us some more flexibility, but it doesn't remove the probable cause from a law enforcement investigation. Probably fewer. But their staffers read it.
You know, privacy is always a balance between public safety and privacy. And, you know, that balance, depending on the world situation, is going to be an ebb and flow. So after a catastrophic event like 9/11, the pendulum swung the other way. You're going to see it go back, I'm sure. And then we'll have another event, and it'll go back again. It's the fact of life. And you vote for your senator and your congressman who enacted the law. So you guys have control. Try this side. Red hat.
With what?
Seymour's old boxes.
I don't know what that is.
I couldn't hear it, so I couldn't repeat it.
Seymour who?
Oh, what are we doing with them? I know what you're talking about. I just didn't quite understand what you said. What are we doing with them? The job we're being paid to do.
I'm not. We need.
A GS-18 or above? Not anymore. But at one time, yes.
Okay. Next to last row, three back. Yeah, you. Loud, please, because we can't hear you up here. Well, All I can tell you.
I'm not a professional.
I just know when I came up to a judge to do any kind of warrant, it was a stack of about an inch and a half worth of paper that we said, this is what we know so far. This is why we need this part of the Patriot Act enacted to go after this bad guy.
And I can just basically say that many of the law enforcement organizations have been very cautious in their uses of these, and probably one of the reasons that very few have been denied is because they've done their homework and they've established the probable cause prior to requesting the judge to issue the warrants. Because the last thing you want as a special agent is to have to go back to your boss and explain to him that you went to a judge, used his time, used the goodwill of your organization for something that he didn't approve.
There's also a pretty good vetting process. So as it's going up the chain, if it's not going to stand the smell test, so to speak, it's not going to make it up to a judge. So that'll help.
Yes, sir.
Further question is for the FBI guy. Another question on selective enforcement. How far does the law
allow? Selective enforcement in which way?
How many laws can be broken before you can't go the other way and your supervisor might start to confuse?
We investigate crimes, okay, and we bring this stuff up before the United States Attorney's Office. They decide who to prosecute. We don't make that decision. I don't have the choice. It's the U.S. Attorney's Office that says arrest them or don't arrest them or indict them or not indict them. We just investigate the crime, bring the stuff up to the AUSA's office, and they make the decision whether they want to even take the case or not. So it's not in our hands whatsoever.
Yes, sir.
What's your role in prosecuting?
I don't think anybody up here prosecutes.
Right, they're the ones that make the decisions as far as any kind of court action. We do the investigation.
Yeah, let me state that there's two basic mechanisms that we have to obtain information from an ISP. One is what we refer to as a 2703D order, and that has to go through the U.S. Attorney's Office and signed by a magistrate. And the second is a traditional search warrant, which also has to go through the U.S. Attorney's Office and be signed by a magistrate. We don't issue, under most circumstances, any other mechanism for obtaining that information. Now, being an inspector general shop, we do have the ability to issue an IG subpoena, but for the most part, since they're almost unenforceable, we usually opt to go through the U.S. Attorney's Office. In most cases, the ISP will not cooperate with law enforcement, even if they want to, until they receive a court order, because it takes them off the hook for civil liability. So once again, if I want to go after you, there's other checks and balances between me and that process that have to be okay by the U.S. Attorney's Office. And I think most of you don't understand something else about the federal system. When I got out of college, I was a street cop for 5.5 years. And when you go out and you make an arrest, whatever that prosecutor is in that local jurisdiction gets that case in the morning and starts dealing with it. In the federal environment, it's very different. You work a case, you go to a U.S. Attorney's Office, and they decide whether they're going to prosecute or not. Just because you broke the law, just because we can prove you broke the law, doesn't mean we'll get a prosecution. Each office within the country will have separate guidelines. So, for instance, when I was a special agent down in Central Florida and South Florida, you had two kinds of cases, drug and other. And if you went in with an other kind of case, if it was, for instance, a theft, if it wasn't at least $100,000 or more, the U.S. Attorney's Office wouldn't take it. Now, in some cases, when we run into this problem, we will opt to go with a state or local prosecution if we feel it's necessary. But every case, and this addresses that other gentleman's question, not every case gets prosecuted, even when it's proven.
Yes, sir.
Stand up.
Can't hear you. Just got to stand up. Hey, if we got to stand up, you could stand up. Come on.
In what way do you want me to speak to it?
I'm wondering when we see the rest of the military in the new year. So, like that, can you educate the rest of the group that are you?
Can you repeat the question?
The question was Secure Linux, Bob, and how we are implementing Secure Linux.
Well, who knows which of us should.
All right. The question from the floor was what is NSA doing to help promote, and I'm going to liberally paraphrase, the implementation of SE Linux within the Department of Defense and elsewhere. Fair enough? That's the question? Bob, you want to start?
I can start. There are many levels and kinds of protection that are applied to data, software, and whatever. And certainly there are some of them that are used at NSA that are not used at other organizations. So there are different methods of approaching this. And the difference between using secure Linux and not very secure Linux is not terribly important when your computer and all of its connections for example, at Fort Meade, where you weren't going to be able to get to that stuff, whether it's secure Linux or insecure Linux. It don't matter.
Go ahead.
In terms of promoting it, I've been gone from the agency now for a little over 2 years, but when I departed and with some limited reading on the subject, they appear to be looking toward opportunities to implement Secure Linux throughout the government and elsewhere. I mean, it's available to anybody to use. It's not merely a government tool. It just happened to be something that was evolved at NSA, published, has gone through the open scrutiny process, and sits out there, essentially asking to be used. It will provide a considerably different capability, better capability from a security standpoint, over the standard Linux. But I can't get into the technical details, not because it's secret. I'm just not capable of getting into the technical details about how this will be used.
Yes, sir.
How does the legal question of Linux open source, such as the STO lawsuit, affect government policy in that area?
I don't know that it does have any effect on it. I mean, there has been a great debate both within the government and between the government and industry regarding open source versus proprietary systems. And it has created a considerable amount of tension between some of the industry giants and the government agencies who are working in open source, such as NSA with Secure Linux. You know, arguments can be made on both sides, and indeed I have participated in arguments on both sides of that issue, and depending upon those doing the arguing, they can be very convincing that the strength in proprietary information is, in fact, that intellectual property that gives us as a nation the edge, vice having things available in an open source context. Similarly, people would argue that it is greater security in an open-source context simply because of the widespread scrutiny that it gets. The counter-argument is, how do you maintain that better security over time in the open-source environment? So there's arguments on both sides, but I don't think the lawsuit has had any real effect on the deployment of it. It's just a continuing debate.
And you have to decide whether you are going to supply secure Linux or something like it to foreign countries, regardless of the relationship of that foreign country to the United States government. This is a severe problem. We're going to give it to Afghanistan?
Perhaps.
And there's been a lot of discussion in the government itself in circles whether or not we should or should not use open source software. Now, we've been very, very progressive. How many people here have ever heard of Nessus? Most of you. How many of you know that Nessus has been hosted on a Department of Treasury server for the last 4.5 years? If you look at the URLs and the IP address, you'll find that we have actually actively hosted Nessus and other programs for about the last 4.5 years. So we do try and work with the community. Part of that is part of my coming from the NASA environment, where NASA was one of the early organizations that did put back in the community. But the government is not anti-open source software. I have 25 servers in my lab that we use for our criminal investigation group. 24 of those are running FreeBSD.
Yes, sir.
We're getting there in front.
Because it's issued. Yes, sir.
Can you briefly describe, for those of you who are investigation, mildly redacted a description of the most interesting or unusual case you've worked on?
Who are you talking to?
Hurry, because you got 2 minutes.
Okay, well, I mean, we've had a couple where we've had inside contractors that have put in backdoor Trojans to delete, like, NFS-mounted systems that would have been equivalent to about 30 different hard drive partitions. We're working a case right now where a contractor broke into a system using some backdoor escalation of privileges. We generally, because we're not in the intelligence community, don't handle some of these esoteric cases using the fancy devices of Patriot Act. So we're more bread and butter. In fact, I'll be honest with you, you'll never see one of our arrests on cops. The last arrest we made, we had a warrant for a guy, and the guy lived about 2.5 hours away from our office, and I really didn't want to have to drive that far. So we called the guy, told him we had a warrant for him, and suggested that we met at a restaurant outside the courthouse, have lunch, and then process him. So I said, how about Monday? He said, Monday wasn't good for him. He asked me about Tuesday. I said, well, Tuesday's not good for me. So finally, Wednesday, we met at the courthouse, had lunch, and then walked across the street and got arrested. You don't see that on cops.
Good. I think the most interesting case that I worked with, that I can share with you, was the Solar Sunrise case. Not because of the technical sophistication of the attack, but because of the reaction that it caused within the bureaucracy at the Department of Defense. It occurred at a critical point in time. It was unknown as to its origin when it began. Later turned out to be two youngsters in Cloverdale, California, with the assistance of a youngster in Tel Aviv. But the reaction of the senior-level bureaucrats in DOD during that period of 3 days of uncertainty as to where this attack was coming from created a wave of change within the Department of Defense from a policy standpoint, and it instilled a fear factor that I believe is still there today. This is a very powerful set of tools that exist out there today that we depend on. That case really pinpointed for me just how powerful they were.
You have 30 seconds.
All right. It was...
okay, thank you, Obi.
Thank you. That's good.
5 minutes has gone by. No comment.
Clearly.
I'll speak to the case I had mentioned before. This guy had hacked into various places, and we never charged him. I told you the results of that. He hit a couple universities. He wandered all around the country, basically telnetting to various servers they can get his hands on. He found out, submitted his toolkit, found out the passwords with ease, and then went on to the next place he could find with the passwords that he found. And he wandered across businesses, ISPs. He kind of wandered into an Air Force base. And, we took notice, and we started writing a whole bunch of stuff down. And why the USA's office did not go after this person, I don't know. I thought we should have. And... But we still had all the records, so later on when he wanted to get his clearance, he's not getting it.
I had two cases that come to mind. First was the Hanover hacker case. I'm sure you're all familiar with working with Cliff Stoll. That was a, part of working with sources is being able to control sources. You can forget that. And the other was a homicide in the Philippines that Alvin worked on also, where the subject was a murder for hire. The husband had his wife murdered. She was stabbed 42 times. When he went to interview the husband as a witness, he cut up two floppy disks, and my deputy and I developed a technique to retrieve the data off the floppy disks. So,
you might want to tell this crowd what a floppy disk is.
You got one of those?
Okay. Unfortunately, we're out of time, so appreciate you all coming.